start. Hare Krishna everyone, welcome to the class. So we'll just briefly summarize what we discussed last class. So we talked about Arjuna is expressing his opinion about the yoga system which Krishna has discussed so far, right? So what was some of Arjuna's comments? Text number 33 onwards, 6th chapter. It's difficult to control mind. Because
mind is restless, it's unsteady.
Unsteady, restless and unsteady. And also, obstinate, yeah.
And
strong, yeah. And very, very difficult to practice. No, impractical, you were saying. This is very, difficult to practice in this age.
Cannot follow the path of equal vision.
Equal vision, yeah. That's also one thing. Because Krishna mentioned about equal vision. So he couldn't see how he could see both Duryodhana and Yudhishthira in the same way. Because, he thinks that one is enemy, one is his brother. So then, what else?
At that time, Krishna was... Even though Arjuna was the intimate friend of Lord Krishna, he couldn't do. He was saying that we can't control mind. What about us in this age of Kali? We can't even think of it.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, Prabhupada is mentioning some of wonderful qualities of Arjuna, saying he's so expert in as an expert bowman, expert kshatriya, and also his Krishna is personally as his friend. So even though, despite of all this good adhikar, he is not able to practice. So what to speak of all of us? So what is the recommended process of yoga for this age?
Chanting
the holy names. Beginning with chanting the holy name, bhakti yoga basically. Then, how does Krishna reply to that analysis of Arjuna? Verse number 35.
Krishna says it's possible to control mind by devotional service and detachment.
Practice and detachment. So what is the practice, Mataji? Sheetal Mataji? What is the practice?
9 types of that.
Devotional service
to the Lord.
Lord, and then? Starting with, mainly, we talked about
hearing
about Krishna. And what is the, if suppose we describe this as a disease, right? Acute disease, which is not able to overcome, the medicine is not able to, it's overpowering the medicine, this disease. So then what is the treatment?
Hearing is the medicine.
Hearing is the medicine.
Prasadam is the diet.
Diet.
And spiritual master is the physician.
Spiritual master. So under the direction of the expert physician, which is spiritual master, we follow the treatment of hearing about Krishna and following the diet of eating prasadam. Then automatically this disease of forgetfulness of Krishna will be cured. And then we will be revived to our original consciousness. Right? Okay. So then next verse. 36. Again, Krishna talks about the importance of controlling the mind. Right? Similar to the Vyavasayatmika Buddhi. So, he's saying one whose mind is controlled, there is a hope of success in yoga process. Otherwise, there is no point. So,
getting fire and putting water.
Putting water in it, yeah. So, main point, today's date, yoga systems where there is no strong emphasis on mind control, just doing a practice, some asanas, and then, but then his important point is that mind control is main core part of any yoga system, otherwise it's not successful at all. We'll continue with today's section, then to 37 onwards. We have 10 verses, 37 to 47. So today we'll do a marathon. Let's see what happens. So I wanted to do is, first I written down everything in a form of flowchart. So I'll go over that first. So we have a high level overview of what it is, and immediately we get the essence, and then we'll go read the verses and some parts of purports. So I want somebody to one at the end of the class or during the, maybe at the end of the class to take a photo of this and send to the group. So whoever missed, many of them missed, so they can get the original one. This. Who wants to volunteer? I will say everybody, one of us, everybody nods, nobody knows who it does. You can do, okay. Okay. Sahu Prabhu will take the response. Okay. Everybody can see? No, it's okay?
Yes.
Handwriting is small, I think. It's okay? Okay. So, so this is the outline of the whole. This is the outline of the whole section, right? 37 to 47. So, 37 to 39, Arjuna is asking the question about the fate of a unsuccessful yogi. Now, we described about this process, Ashtanga Yoga, and this so elaborate, so detailed, and all those things. You know, what if somebody takes up this process and he's not successful? No, I'm concerned. You know, what's the hope? You know, is this like all the time invested, is it waste, or is there any hope for him? And he's asking about two different types of yogis. One is person who practiced for short amount of time. Other one is a person who practiced for a long amount of time. So there are two different types of yogis. Right? So that's the second fate of an unsuccessful yogi. And then Krishna starts replying from verse number 40 onwards. So first, in verse number 40, he gives a summary which says that actually any effort made in a spiritual path never goes in vain. It's always eternal benefit. So that's the essence. He says, you know, effort is never wasted. So then next verse onwards, 41 to 42 is a detailed answer to this. So first he answers yogi with a short practice, the left side of that. What happens to him is in the verse number 41. He first ascends to heavenly planets. So essentially, he practiced for a short amount of time, but still because he has a lot of material desires, he is not able to succeed. So he is given a chance to go to heavenly planets where there is an ample amount of opportunity to enjoy and fulfill his propensities. Right? Once that is all, quota is done, all his karma is done, he is given a chance to come back again to this material world. So that he can again, and he will be born in one of either Brahmana or aristocratic families where it's already well off. He doesn't have to strive for basic necessities. So there is a chance that he can pick it up from there. So he can, you know, given a chance when he meets again devotees or something, there is a possibility he can pick it up. But the thing is, still because of the opulence in that families, there is always a risk because already he has practiced for a short amount of time. So there is a great risk to go that path actually. And the other thing is, a person who practiced for a long time, what happens to him is he is immediately given birth in a transcendentalist family. So he will be born in a family where they are already practicing devotional service. So right from the childhood, he gets an impetus to practice devotional service. So he will be born in this bhakti culture. The parents are, you know, always eating prasadam. There is always kirtan going on. There is always hearing the holy names, reading Bhagavatam. So from childhood, the kid gets the impetus to practice devotional service. And naturally, already because he practiced, he has a natural inclination. So he takes it up very smoothly and he gets a full opportunity to perfect his life this time. And then after that, after explaining these two verses, he says that 43 to 45, which applies to both the categories of yogis, which are what happens after that, after he gets birth into Brahmanical aristocratic family or in transcendental family, he struggles for further perfection in this life. Based on the remembrance from previous life and the situation around him, he takes it full opportunity and he struggles for his perfection. And last two verses is not, actually this 37 to 45 is one section altogether, but these are just two verses, we thought we'll hopefully cover it, is where Krishna is again emphasizing that among all the yogis, bhakti yogi is the topmost, which we have understood from Srila Prabhupada's purports, right? Here and there, always he keeps saying, you know, devotee is always a yogi, but yogi is not a perfect person unless he is a devotee, he always says. But we will also hear it from Krishna's words, where he says among all types of yogis, so there is no confusion for us that bhakti yogi is the topmost. Okay, so with this outline, I think it should help in going a little bit, you know, smoother, faster.
One question. When you're saying short practice versus long practice, what does it mean?
The amount of time invested in the yoga. We cannot say like, you know, years or... I don't know what is Krishna's... What is Arjuna's estimation. But relatively, we can see. Like maybe, you know, one person maybe practiced like just a few years versus maybe somebody practicing for lifetimes. Right? Something like that. Okay, so we'll read the... Sanskrit and the verses and some sections of the Bhagavad Gita. So first of all, maybe we'll read this one and we'll discuss some points. Text number 37. Arjuna uvacha ayati shraddhayopeto yoga chalita manasa aprapya yoga samsiddhim kam gatin krishna gacchati. Arjuna said, O Krishna, what is the destination of the unsuccessful transcendentalist? So that is the first one. You can write, if you have a pencil, you can write against this unsuccessful transcendentalist, category number one. And then maybe next to it you can say long practice. And then comma, who in the beginning takes to the process of self-realization with faith but who later desists due to worldly mindedness. This is the second one. So that's why it's not clear, that's why I mentioned what it is. So unsuccessful transcendentalist is right. That is the first category. The person for long practice. No, long practice. So that's why I said number one. Okay, so here I should say one and two differently. Maybe you should have reversed. Sorry. Because the Krishna answers it in that way. So first one is unsuccessful transcendentalist is a long practice. That's the first category. Then next one is who in the beginning takes to the process of self-realization with faith but who later desists due to worldly mindedness. So this is the second one, which is short practice.
But it looks like explaining that. Like unsuccessful transcendentalist who, like I think Krishna is elaborating
that
one. Is it long and short, separate or same thing?
Yeah, that's how it seems like, but that's why we understand from our acharyas. That, you know, what Prabhupada comments and how the acharyas have explained it. So it's very clear from, and also it's very clear from Krishna's answers also. He tells about two different destinations. Later it means like that, but you know, English to Sanskrit may not be so, sometimes, you know, something may be lost when we try to translate it to English. Lost means not meaning, but you know, the commas and all those things makes a difference. And also we can see from the way Krishna answers and from the acharyas, we can understand there are two different categories. Okay. And thus does not attain perfection in mysticism. Okay, so first thing is, I wanted to just have some discussion. So this is a concept we hear in ISKCON or in the Krishna consciousness, something called falling down. Have you heard any time? Yes, so fall down. So what does it mean? What do we understand about it?
Again getting trapped in the material.
Okay, again getting trapped in the material whirlpool. Like, you know, again getting attached to our old habits and, you know, basically giving up the process of Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
So somehow or the other we got it. And then suddenly we again lose taste and feel like, okay, I just don't want to take it up anymore. I want to come back to my old life, whatever so called. So already, you know, Prabhupada says we are already fallen. Initially we are already fallen. Somehow we are making step by step progress. And at some point if we stop following the process, then we are again falling down actually. So we are getting entrapped in the material existence. Okay, so then, so let's discuss some points. You know, what do we think actually usually are the causes for falling down? Like from your experience or from seeing others or from hearing some stories. Or generally, you know, you can think about it, right? Why would, let's say we are not talking about somebody who is already struggling or something. Let's say somebody is very sincere, practicing very seriously. Right? So this way we can actually make note of it and help ourselves catch the situations. Right? So what would be some of the factors for falling down?
One is lack of association.
That's very good. So lack of association. So the example is?
Like when you're among devotees, whether you are making at least the community will help you to advance, and then you can control and
yeah,
you can do things.
That's right.
But if you are aloof.
Yes. So many in Prabhupada's disciples also, many of them actually, when they heard about Haridas Thakur, you know, how he chants 300,000 names of Lord Krishna all the almost 24 hours a day, they were very inspired, and they said, you know, we will, you know, we Prabhupada give us permission. Now we have lot of taste for holy name. We want to go sit in one, bhajan kutir, and we want to chant. Prabhupada said, no, you know, you cannot do it. You cannot imitate. You cannot do it. But some people did. After 2-3 days, they left like completely all the whole process. No, it's because they wanted to go alone and do. No, Prabhupada created a system where the help of association, we protect each other. That's a very good point. So somebody, you can write it down. You know, whoever is interested. So unless association, lack of association. And the next, some of the other points. Another example is basically, example for this is Bharat Maharaj. Bharat Maharaj, he left association and he went to the forest to do meditation, and then he started getting attached to the deer, and he thought about the deer, and he became a deer next life, and he lost, of course he remembered his Krishna consciousness, but again he continued later on. Right? So that's example for association.
Who is this Bharat Maharaj? Like Rama's
brother? Not Rama's brother.
Jada.
Somebody else.
Lack of desire.
No, we are talking about somebody who is already seriously, sincerely practicing, let's say.
Or ego, proud.
Proud, yes. Pride is another factor which can help falling down. Because, okay, after coming little bit, you know, making progress, we start learning verses, slokas, and we start teaching others. We start thinking, okay, you know, I am the boss now. Slowly, you know, pride creeps up. Because of the pride, what happens, main thing is, we start committing offenses. So that's the main factor. Pride leads to, because we think we are better than others, we start committing offenses. So offenses will actually is a major thing which causes fall down. Because bhakti is spiritual, nothing material can stop it. Right? Only spiritual can give bhakti. As we discussed last time, Srikant Prabhu asked this question. So only bhakti can give bhakti. At the same time, nothing material can stop bhakti. So only offenses, spiritual offenses can stop bhakti. Stop bhakti means it can, basically it can cover us. Bhakti is like eternal bank account. Now it cannot be withdrawn actually, but we will be covered up so that we can rectify our mistake and again revive and come again sincerely back to the practice to just help us so that, and to protect other devotees from getting offended, and because Krishna doesn't, devotees are dear to him, so he cannot, to some extent he will give the chance, but after some time he says, you know, okay, now you have to rectify. So pride leads to offenses that causes fall down. Then some of the other things,
lack of hearing.
No, this person is, let's say, sincerely practicing.
But if someone is seriously practicing, definitely association would be there, right? Otherwise no one can reach that even seriously practicing platform.
No, but let's say I'm seriously practicing 5 years, but after some time I may decide I'm advanced, I want to go somewhere.
Yeah, that's the reason I'm saying after 5 years also he can stop hearing, right? So means that is my stopping everything.
Okay, that's fine. Okay. No, but that is because that is the
interest after some time, because of maybe monotonous or something.
Material attachments.
Exactly. So because of previous conditioning and material attachments, even though for some period of time he is able to get due to association because of some effect of some pure devotees, he may do it for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say suddenly, because of maybe wrong association, these desires may creep in again. And he starts contemplating, oh, actually, you know, that was fun. Watching movies, you know, or, you know, going to bars. That was actually, maybe, you know, let me try now. Or maybe go and preach. No, so previous conditioning and previous material attachments can actually become more stronger at a certain point and overtake his devotional service. Another one, what did Prabhupada caution? You know, who are we fighting against in devotional service?
Maya.
So other thing is, because of course Maya adds to material attachments, but Sir Prabhupada said actually, you know, one of my main complaints about my disciples are, one is, first of all, they are not afraid enough of Maya. Second is, they don't read my books. He said this. So, you know, we should be, right from the start, when we start taking devotional service, we should be very, very much afraid about Maya. Because she is all the time seeing opportunity, when can I capture this person again? Of course, she is doing service to Krishna, so that she doesn't allow anybody who is unqualified back in spiritual world. So, she is giving all the tests all the time. and temptations to the soul so that he can again come back into her trap and it's easy for her. Then she can forget about that person. But if somebody is seriously, sincerely trying, she has to always watch an eye. Keep an eye, you know, okay, when can I catch this person? So she has to be always working. So Maya is always very strong, is very strong, and she is always ready to trap. So the devotee has to be very, very much afraid of Maya, cautious. And with that sincerity and eagerness and enthusiasm, take shelter of, you know, the process. Another thing, another reason?
I think we should have strong foundation also. Like we are practicing, but if someone is able to convince you, for example, for some reason, you may get bewildered and you may fall off also. So it's always better that whatever we are doing, we should understand the core fundamentals and then we should have faith and then also understand it.
Okay, so practicing without philosophy essentially, doing it as sentiment or something, you know, somebody is doing it as sentiment without found philosophy, grounded in philosophy. Yeah, that's also. Okay, another thing which, another point which I had was, somebody, this is given in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says four kinds of people come to me to do devotional service. Right? Who are the four kinds? Who are distressed?
And knowledge.
Wealth, who are seeking wealth, who are seeking knowledge, and who are wise. Four kinds of people. Seventh chapter. So all these people, among them, Krishna says the one who seeks, who's wise is the best devotee because he doesn't have any material motive. But all the other people who come, which most of us come like this, what happens is after some time, these things, desires will be fulfilled. Mostly we come because of distress, especially. After some time we see it's joyful, you know, everybody is happy, prasadam, you know, we just have to go sing and dance. Our process is, Prabhupada said, singing, dancing and feasting. So it's all fun, right? Who will not take it? So then all the fun starts and you start losing, you know, the distress, you'll start forgetting and life changes. Then you think, okay, I can be here, happy here. That's enough for me. Why should I, you know, control my senses? Why should I control my mind? Why should I do Ekadashi? No, these are all little bit, no, I didn't come in for this. So then they came in with a material motive. A material motive is satisfied. So they can stop there. That much amount of devotional service they can do and they can stop. So basically, this is like coming in with material motive and not being purified out of it. So the idea is, once we come with the material, we all come with a material motive, but because of association, somehow we should transcend that. We say, okay, I came for my distress being cured, but actually I found something else. I really want Krishna now. So our desire now should be, I want to have pure devotional service to Krishna. Then, you know, whether I'm distressed or, again distress will come anyway. Whether I'm distressed or not distressed, I still continue serving Krishna. Okay, these are some of the points I thought, you know, we should meditate because this fits into the theme. Okay, so now let's go to the purport. Okay, so let's read last few lines.
To pursue the transcendental path is more or less to declare war on the illusionary energy. Consequently, whenever a person tries to escape the clutches of the illusionary energy, she tries to defeat the practitioner by various allurements. A conditioned soul is already allured by the modes of material energy, and there is every chance of being allured again, even while performing transcendental disciplines. This is called yoga chalati manasa, deviation from the transcendental path. Arjuna is inquisitive to know the results of deviation from the path of self-realization.
So the one point Prabhupada is talking about in the power of Maya and how it can tempt the soul. So we discussed that, right? So that factor he was telling. And considering this, Arjuna is asking, what is the, you know, destination of such a person who falls down or who stops after a certain period of time? So we'll hear Krishna's reply. Text number 38. Kachinno bhaya vibratas chinnabhram iva nashyati apratishto mahabaho vimudo brahmanapati. O mighty Am Krishna, does not such a man who is bewildered from the path of transcendence fall away from both spiritual and material success and perish like a riven cloud with no position in any sphere? It's a very nice point, right? Everybody understood what it is? What is Arjuna saying here?
So who hasn't progressed in the transcendental path and has fallen out? It's like a cloud, small cloud separated from the big cloud, and now it has nowhere to go. Neither it can fall down as rain, neither it can stay in the cloud. So it's like Trisangu Avastha.
So with respect to the original terms, what does it mean? No, why he cannot fall away from both spiritual and material success?
Because he can't stay in the spiritual path because of the material attachments, and he don't. When he come to back to his back life, he feel like he's doing some mistake, and he has some taste to a spiritual thing, and he has more attachment. Both sides, it's like pulling on the
like
side.
If you're not leaving your material attachment and trying to grab the spiritual knowledge, so it's like always you're in contradiction.
Yeah, it's like putting leg on two boats, right? Both are going in opposite direction. You fall down in the middle. But also, the other point is, so basically to take up spirituality, already we are trying to give up our, you know, our old friends or our old habits. And so materially, we want to change our nature, right? We want to stop all the material things we were doing. So we have given up that life, let's say, you know. That's the idea, that's the conviction. With that conviction, we say, okay, I want to fully embrace the spiritual path. So I've given up material life and I'm fully embracing the spiritual life, and I'm now making progress little. At some point, I say, oh, this is not going to work. So I'm going to stop again. So I've given up this and now I'm giving up this. So what's going to happen to me? So that's why, you know, is it like the small cloud which has given up this big cloud and is trying to join another cloud, and it's in the middle now, nowhere. Is neither the here nor this. So what's going to happen to this person? So that's a very nice analogy Arjuna is giving. So let's read the purport. First, from the beginning, there are two ways to progress.
There are two ways to progress. Those who are materialists have no interest in transcendence. Therefore, they are more interested in material advancement by economic development or in promotion to the higher planets by appropriate work. When one takes to the path of transcendence, one has to cease all material activities and sacrifice all the forms of so-called material happiness. If the aspiring transcendentalist fails, then he apparently loses both ways. In other words, he can enjoy neither material happiness nor spiritual success. He has no position. He is like a riven cloud. A cloud in the sky sometimes deviates from small cloud and joins a big one. But if it cannot join a big one, then it is blown away by the wind and becomes a non-entity in the
vast
sky.
You can pause there, Prabhu. So it's very clear, right? We discussed that earlier. Okay, so we'll continue with the next verse. Text number 39. Etan me samshayam Krishna chetum arhasi asheshata tvat anya samshayashya Chetana hi upapadyate. This is my doubt, O Krishna, and I ask you to dispel it completely. But for you, no one is to be found which who can destroy this doubt. So our teacher mentioned, you know, Arjuna is asking in a very affectionate way. O Krishna, you know, this is my doubt. It's like that. You know? So, you know, I ask you to dispel it completely. Because I don't find anybody else other than you who can destroy this doubt. Arjuna is so fortunate to have Krishna directly, you know, can destroy his doubts. Okay, we'll read from 5th line down. So he has already cleared up the question.
So he has already cleared up the question of the future of individual living entity. Now, Arjuna wants to know of the future of the unsuccessful transcendentalist.
Okay, the point Prabhupada is saying is, in second chapter, you remember Krishna says, you know, we are all, you, me and all these kings are individuals before past, individuals now and individuals in the future. So the individuality of the soul is already clarified by Arjuna. That's the first phrase Prabhupada is saying. Arjuna has already cleared up the question of the future of the individual living entity.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's I wanted to make a relation. You know, what does it mean? Everybody got the point? Okay.
Yeah.
And now he's asking about future of an unsuccessful transcendentalist.
No one is equal to or above Krishna. And certainly the so-called great sages and philosophers who are at the mercy of material nature cannot equal him. Therefore, the verdict of Krishna is a final and complete answer to all doubts, because he knows past, present and future perfectly. But no one knows him. Krishna and Krishna conscious devotees alone can know what it is. What is what?
So nice statement, Prabhupada is saying, right? Krishna and Krishna conscious devotees alone can know what is what. It's very, you know, humble statement. Because Krishna conscious devotees are being revealed by Krishna, you know, what is what. So, who are fully Krishna conscious, so they also know what is what. Okay? So, we'll continue. Next verse. It's okay? Text number 40. Now, Krishna starts replying. So, we are here now. So, we are in this. Text number 40, right? Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Partha Naiveha Namurta Vinashastasya Vidyate Nahi Kalyana Krikashit Durgatin Tata Gachati Tata Gachati. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O son of Pritha, a transcendentalist engaged in auspicious activities does not meet with destruction either in this world or in the spiritual world. One who does good, my friend, is never overcome by evil. So this is why he's giving an overview. He's saying, a person who does any engaged in auspicious activities of devotional service, there is no loss for him. He is always going to meet good. He'll never be facing a inauspicious result. So they're all. It's always beneficial. He's saying, no? First of all, you should not even think that, oh, I invested so much time in devotional service, is it waste? So he's saying it's very clear. It's never wasted. The point to this is like essentially the amount of investment we make in bhakti, it is said it's like it's an eternal bhakti account. And in that bhakti bank account, there is only, even though we withdraw actually, it doesn't decrease. And it's always going to be there lifetime after lifetime. And when we leave in this lifetime, next lifetime, that's what it's going to cover in next lives, next verses. So, after a certain amount of period of time, this is what Srikanth Prabhu asked. Why some people come after 20 years? Why some people take up 40 years, 60 years? What's the difference? The difference is like in that life, certain karmically, certain things have to be worked out so that that person is ready to take it up, you know, to meet the devotees and take it up. If you see in our lives also, even though we might have heard certain things, something, somehow we were not like, we didn't take it up. Probably we, like, you know, we would have signed up to some group or met devotees earlier, but we were not inclined. But there will be a certain time where something was ready in our life where we just had to take it up. So, you know, that situation has to come. So, some things have to work out. You know, that's why the different people take different amount of, they stay, take up at a different time. So, but then when they take up, they start where they left off. So, how it is that... how we can see that is, how it manifests is that the moment they come in touch with devotees and they hear the holy name and they hear the process, they become attracted. So that's a symptom. So people who have practiced for previous lives, the symptom is the moment in this life they get in touch with Krishna consciousness, they become attracted. But people who are not, you know, they still show repulsion or, you know, they are, that means they are beginning. Maybe this is the first life for them.
Like
yesterday,
Prabhupada gave the example, right? Rumpa,
yeah.
Maharaj, when he saw the Prabhu's lecture, Prabhupada's lecture, first class only he got convinced.
Yeah, convinced and yeah, just took it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, other thing is Prabhupada also said in, when all these hippies, right, they were asking Prabhupada what was our qualification. Prabhupada said, I created your qualification. And also he said that even though, you know, you were drinking to all these bad habits, the moment you heard the holy name, you came running. No, that shows that you are all actually, in another lecture he said, another conversation he said, actually all the people, hippies who got attracted and became his disciples, they were all yogis in Himalayas in last lives. That's what Prabhupada said. They were yogis and they practiced for a long time and now they were taking up. That's why if you see any of the lives of dedicated followers of Prabhupada, it's amazing, you know, how much dedication they have, how much they accomplished, how much they still stick to the path, and now after 40, 50 years they are... No, they are like moving Prabhupada's representatives. Like, you know, it's like amazing. We can read their, actually we can read their biographies also. So much, that shows, you know, they are not ordinary people actually. You know, they continued from previous life, and because of potency of Prabhupada and their dedication to Prabhupada, they are able to perfect their lives. So, no, that's the point. So, that's why there is no loss And similar verse in second chapter, Krishna says, you can write it next to it, it's 2.40. Krishna says, Svalpam apyasya dharmasya atrayato mahato bayat. No, you can overcome greatest fear. The little endeavor in this path, you can overcome greatest fear, Krishna says. 2.40. Okay, so we'll read last paragraph, the purport. Those who are following the path of auspiciousness.
Those who are following the path of auspiciousness can be divided into three sections, namely the followers of scriptural rules and regulations who are enjoying material prosperity, those who are trying to find ultimate liberation from material existence, and those who are devotees in Krishna consciousness. Those who are following the rules and regulations of the scriptures for material happiness may be further divided into two classes, those who are fruitive workers and those who desire no fruit for sense gratification.
Okay, we can pause there. Actually, I can give the names to all of this so it's easier for you. The first one is the follower of scriptural rules and regulations who are enjoying material prosperity. These are karmis. And second one, those who are trying to find ultimate liberation from material existence are jnanis, right? And the last one are bhaktas. And then the two, those who among these, among the first category, now Prabhupada is giving two classes, right? Those who are following the rules and regulations of scripture for material happiness may be divided into two classes. One is one who are fruity workers, that is basically sakama karmis. Or, you know, if you want, you can write, otherwise it's okay. Next one is Nishkama Karmis. They are working without fruit for sense gratification. That's okay. This may be too much detail. You can leave it if you want. Okay, continue.
But one question. For material, those who are working for material happiness, only we are dividing them into subcategories, right? Then how can you say no fruit for sense gratification?
But they may be doing for in this life so that they can enjoy next life. Like, you know, somebody may do Nishkama Karma Yoga in this life so that I can attain heavenly planets or something like that, right? Give up some things.
Those who are after fruitive results for sense gratification may be elevated to a higher standard of life, even to higher planets.
Yeah, that's what.
But still, because they are not free from material existence, they are not following the truly auspicious path. The only auspicious activities are those which lead one to liberation. Any activity which is not aimed at ultimate self-realization or liberation from the material bodily concept of life is not at all auspicious. Activity in Krishna consciousness is the only auspicious activity, and anyone who voluntarily accepts all bodily discomforts for the sake of making progress on the path of Krishna consciousness can be called a perfect transcendentalist under severe austerity. And because the eightfold yoga system is directed towards the ultimate realization of Krishna consciousness, such practice is also auspicious. And no one who is trying his best in this matter need fear degradation.
Okay. So here again, Prabhupada is defining what is auspicious activity. We may have many concepts. Auspicious activities is giving food to people or giving in charity or so many things, right? That's a, taking care of orphan kids, so many concepts. So what's the definition Prabhupada is giving of an auspicious activity? Krishna conscious activity, or activity in Krishna consciousness is the only auspicious activity, because that has only spiritual benefit. There is no material tinge in that, right? And so it gives an eternal result. So the point is, any activity which is not aimed at ultimate self-realization is not at all auspicious. So blunt, or rather, so sharp, right? No, any activity which is not aimed at ultimate self-realization is not at all auspicious. No, we should come to this realization, actually. That's when we can become very serious about Krishna consciousness. Unless we come to this point, we'll always be investing something here, something there. I may like this. Maybe that's better still. All this. So we should have somehow, pray that we should have this realization that, no longer, I don't want to try any more of all this.
So it says, even if you do it to the poor people or orphan kids or anything, that is all material.
Yeah, it's it has a role to play. It's not like you know they're condemned or it's they're bad or they have a role to play, because somebody who cannot there are multiple levels of help we can do, right? So we can help the person for food, or we can, after doing that, we can help them give the knowledge by which they can realize themselves as pure spirit souls, right? But of course, somebody who is hungry, they are not ready to listen, right? That's why there is role for those people also who want to give charity, who are not into spirituality, who cannot give this knowledge. So they can, if they are inclined, they can help the poor, they can give the, you know, take care of orphans, everything. But what is the highest welfare activity? That's the point Prabhupada said. The highest welfare activity is to save the soul, so that they can completely get out of the clutches of this matter altogether. No, this is basically the solution, ultimate solution to the problems. Otherwise, you know, today they are hungry, tomorrow also they will be hungry and all. We are not saying that is wrong or that is, that is bad. That is, but the result is material anyway also, and it's not the ultimate benefit for the soul. That's the point. You understood the point?
Basically, but what I made it a point was like, even if he is today he is hungry or tomorrow he is hungry, serving the small kids or anything, what I was thinking about is serving a small kids, looking them in the Krishna, and if we are serving them for the lifetime, taking an orphan kid with us who doesn't have it, and even then we are Krishna conscious, we can still, being a material too, we can just take that kid and help them too, right?
Yeah, that's
but
true.
But helping them is material, that doesn't correct me.
No, you can help, if at all, if somebody is qualified, spiritually inclined, and if you can help the kid become a devotee, that's a wonderful thing. Like, let's say if many of the devotees actually, you know, who they, after a long time, they couldn't conceive, they adopted kids and they raised them to become devotees. That's very good. But if you just take a child and just give it food, clothes and shelter and education, and not give the real thing, let's say, you know, I will chant, but I'll not give the kid chanting, then we are not really benefiting the child. Maybe this life will take care, but again, we are not really helping, right? Ultimately, that's what I'm saying. No, so that's the point. Okay, so we'll continue then.
But in the last line, they're saying the word is in need, fear, degradation. What is this context here?
So that's why there is no fear for further fall down, or you know, there is no fear for being degraded into this material life again. So essentially, you know, the Prabhupada is saying this yoga practice, Ashtanga yoga, is also leading to ultimately Krishna consciousness. So he is saying it's also auspicious.
Ashtanga yoga.
Yeah, Ashtanga yoga or any activity in Krishna consciousness is auspicious. There is no need for, there is no, what to say, there is no need to fear. We don't need to fear that I'm going to fall down again. Degradation means coming down again to the old ways, right? Okay. So we'll go to the text number 41. So this Krishna is replying after a short time, right? Praptya punya kritam lokan ishrutva shashvati sama suchinam shimatam gehe yoga brashto vichayate. The unsuccessful yogi, after many, many years of enjoyment on the planets of the pious living entities, is born into the family of righteous people or into the family of rich aristocracy. So that's the point we mentioned. So he goes to the planets of higher planets. After enjoyment for many, many years, he is again born into the righteous family or Brahmanical family or family of rich aristocracy. Okay, so we'll read the last paragraph.
The real purpose of yoga practice is to achieve the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness, as explained in the last verse of this chapter. But those who do not persevere to such an extent, and who fail because of material allurements or alone, by the grace of the Lord, to make full utilization of their material
propensities.
And after that they are given opportunities to live
prosperous
lives in righteous or or disgruntled families. Those who are born in such families may take advantage of the facilities and try to elevate themselves to full Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, so the thing is, you know, it takes long. Prabhupada said, you know, it may Krishna consciousness is simple, but it's difficult. Its process is simple. It's difficult because we have attachments, right? Difficult for us. So that's why, you know, somebody may not persevere, as we discussed. And the one of the factors for it, Prabhupada mentioned in this purport, we discussed many factors, right? Material temptations. So again, suddenly, we may feel again we want to play games, no? Something like that. So then, you know, then Krishna will give you a chance to go to some game planet or something. You can keep playing all the time. And then after enough fed up with this game, battery is going down, and it's like, okay, let me come back to do devotional service. So then, no, and in these families, it's already well off, so they no need to work for basic necessities. So they can pick it up from there. So this, I was reading this Yamuna Mataji's biography. There is very nice incident of in the beginning stages where Prabhupada was very concerned. He always told the disciples, you know, please follow the four regulative principles, chant nicely, you know, there is very risk of, Maya is very strong, be careful, don't, because he's moving from place to place, establishing centers, and devotees are very new, right? He is the one who is guiding everyone, so in his absence, so he was mentioning, giving instruction, make sure that, you know, in my absence, you follow this, that will protect you. He was cautioning. It's always he had the feeling, and always Prabhupada said, actually, because we are war against Maya, there will always be casualties. Casualty means death. So it's inevitable. Prabhupada said, you know, we don't want, but it may happen. It will happen that there will be casualties. That means people will fall away. It's you know, because it's a high goal, and all of us are coming from different backgrounds, and we may not sustain. So it's possible. So then there is within 1 year or something. I don't know the time period before. Within few years, actually one disciple came. It's a very, very touching incident, the way it's described. So what happened is, all the disciples in that center, they were sitting and attending a class. So one person, I think he already told Prabhupada, or people had a feeling actually, you know, that he's going to go from the way he's behaving or things like that. So suddenly he entered the room, and instead of, he paid obeisances, and instead of walking, he started crawling from his hands and knees, and then came to Prabhupada Vyasasan. He came like this, and he looked at Prabhupada, like, you know, like this. And Prabhupada was very affectionately, come my son, come my son. Then he brought his head on his lap. He started rubbing his head, and he said, Prabhupada said, please don't go. Please, you know, please take this and perfect your life. Don't go. Then he looked at Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, I'm crazy. I cannot stay. Then all the devotees are like literally in tears.
He left.
Yeah, I think he left. Because he, see, from the way he approached, we can see, right, he also knows what is being given. But he's saying, I'm not able to take it. So Prabhupada always prayed to save everyone.
Probably he came back later, I'm not sure.
Yeah, actually, yeah. So I think from the names at least, I heard the name, his name was Ravindra Swarup. I don't know, because now also we have Ravindra Swarup Prabhu. I don't know if it's the same Prabhu or different Prabhu, I don't know. I don't know how to make connection, I didn't ask anybody.
Mm.
But you know, at least we know now there is Ravindra Swarup Prabhu. Recently on a Memorial Day weekend, Rompath Maharaj gave a seminar with Ravindra Swarup Prabhu. Maybe it's the same Prabhu, I don't know.
Mm.
But at least, you know, we can see how that person also could realize what he's getting, but he's feeling, because of this temptation, I'm crazy, I'm not able to take it. So that's what is happening. So we'll continue with the next verse. Now it's after long practice. Text number 42. Atava yoginam eva kule bhavati dhimatam etati dulabadharam loke janmayati strisham. Or If unsuccessful after long practice of yoga, he takes his birth in the family of transcendentalists who are surely great in wisdom. Certainly, such a birth is rare in this world. So, Krishna, that's why you know there are two answers. If he is practicing after a long time, what happens? He takes birth in the family of transcendentalists who are surely great in wisdom. So, because, and then Krishna is clarifying, Durlabataram. Such a birth is very rare. Krishna is saying, such a birth is very rare. Being born in a devotee family, it's a very, very rare birth. So we'll read this Srila Prabhupada's touching purport actually.
Birth in a family of yogis or transcendentalists. Those with great wisdom is praised herein because the child born in such a family receives a spiritual impetus from the very beginning of his life. It is especially the case in the Acharya or Goswami families. Such families are very learned and devoted by traditional and training, and thus they become spiritual masters. In India, there are many such Acharya families, but they have now degenerated due to insufficient education and training. By the grace of the Lord, there are still families that foster transcendentalist generation after generation. It is certainly very fortunate to take birth in such families. Fortunately, both our spiritual master, Om Vishnupada Sri Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, and our humble self had the opportunity to take birth in such families by the grace of the Lord. And both of us were trained in the devotional service of the Lord from the very beginning of our life. Later on, we met by the order of the transcendental system.
Yeah, so Prabhupada is saying, being born in this Acharya Goswami families, from the childhood they get the impetus to practice, and because of the tradition and training, and they will be able to perfect their lives. And he is talking about two examples. Who are the two examples?
Himself and
his spiritual master, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. So here, and as well in a couple of purports in Bhagavatam, related to same theme, Prabhupada talks about himself.
Why say our humble self?
Because he doesn't want to say I. No, I is very proud word, right? He's saying humbly I am saying myself.
Mm-hmm. Our humble self. Nice user.
Yeah, it's humbly saying, he doesn't want to talk about himself.
Generally say my humble, like my humble self, I was thinking.
Our, we say, right, I is, we never say I, right, we say plural.
Yeah.
Because I and the spirit source, we say we.
And say
other
than like in kingdom, king's family, they say something like that, right?
No,
yeah, prestigious.
Natural, that because Paramatma is
yes.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you always address
yeah.
The.
Yeah.
And then our spiritual master, the word
yeah.
is used, not
yeah.
my spiritual.
Yeah,
master.
Yeah. It's my. This the possessive pronouns are very, self-centered, right? So that's why. Anyway, we are trying to take it away from the point. So Srila Prabhupada mentioning about himself and. His spiritual master, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he is the son of Bhakti Vinod Thakur. This is also one of the Acharya. So Bhakti Vinod Thakur had 13 children and he prayed for a ray of Vishnu to come to propagate this mission. Then Bhakti Siddhanta is born. And Bhakti Siddhanta, from very childhood, we could see, how, actually when he was very small, I don't know which age, he's been born by Jagannath Puri. So the Ratayatra goes in front of their house because Bhakti Vinod Thakur is a magistrate, very, very respectable, and also a devotee, great devotee of the Lord. So he goes in front of his house. So once it went, then I think mother took Bhakti Siddhanta up to give blessings, give darshan for the Lord. I don't know what age he was. And then she put him in front of Jagannath. Then, miraculously one garland falls down from Jagannath onto his to show that he has the blessings of Jagannath, and later he becomes he remains a Naishtiki Brahmachari and Acharya in our Sampradaya, and he inspired Srila Prabhupada to spread it all over the West. So he is the, and Prabhupada obviously gives credit to his spiritual master for whatever he did. And Srila Prabhupada also says that he, from the beginning, you know, in his home, his father always invited sadhus home and served them prasadam. Always there's a culture of, you know, kirtan and culture of inviting devotees and giving prasadam offering. And from childhood he was worshipping, his father used to worship Radha Krishna deities with so much devotion. He could see that, you know, and he, from the childhood, he was making Jagannath cart and he was, you know, all these things, right? So, he, Prabhupada said once, actually, never for a moment I forgot Krishna, he said very clearly. Even from the childhood, so, you know, like that. And another point is, you know, birth is very rare. So, I was listening to one lecture that Prabhu was emphasizing, actually, the children who are born in our families, the, you know, now, even now, actually, they are very, very special children. No, we may see that, you know, they are making noise while class is happening or something is happening like that, because they are just using, they are acting according to their propensity right now, but actually, you know, subconsciously they are hearing everything from a very small age, and they're just naturally like it. We can see it in our kids, you know, it's very spontaneously they get attracted. And for kids who are born before the parents come to Krishna consciousness, it's you know, it's based on parents' sincerity and their dedication, they can give the same facility for their kids, you know, to give that opportunity to practice and, you know, become perfect. So it's up to the parents to become very serious and devoted, so, you know, they can give the same opportunity to the kids. I heard about this very nice point. For any person's character, there are three factors. One is their samskaras. These samskaras are determined before their birth. This is called samskaras, or their, you know, their vasanas, they say, you know, their inclinations or something like that, you know, the samskara. Second one is their family upbringing after they are born. And the third one is their association, what they take as they grow up. These are three factors. So if you see, actually, parents can have favorable environment for the kids for the first, because they can do the first two. So the samskaras, how it is said that the 90% of the samskaras of the child are determined 1 year before they are born. So 9 months during the pregnancy and 3 months before the birth, before the pregnancy, conception. So the 1 year period before the child is born determines the 90% of the samskaras. So the consciousness of the parents before they conceive determines the child which gets attracted to the womb and which is born. So that's why Prabhupada gave this Garbhodhan Samskara, so to purify the womb for the both husband and for the, so that the pure soul gets attracted, and devotees actually chant and hear for years together for the preparation to receive a child which can propagate the movement of Krishna consciousness movement. So sometimes some devotees, they take long time to give birth, that's the reason also. Because that the parents have to be qualified to receive such a soul. And sometimes miscarriages happen because of that also. Because in some incident in that book I read, when there is a miscarriage, Prabhupada said, you know, there is something not favorable, something not appropriate materially, that's why the child couldn't stay. But if at all there is chanting going on, then there is always, the child is benefited. So, you know, he said that's the thing. So that's why, you know, whoever wants to conceive, you know, it's a duty for them to prepare their consciousness for at least 1 year, you know, to attract that pure soul, so that they can use it, you can give the soul as a service to Srila Prabhupada's mission. So that's one thing. And so the two factors, the second factor is upbringing. So if parents are devotees, naturally, you know, they can give that wonderful upbringing to the children with love and affection and Krishna consciousness. And the third thing, as they grow up, you know, parents can to some extent guide their association, but after, when they become teens and everything, you know, it's not in their control, but with the culture they have given, with the taste they have obtained, naturally kids will hopefully choose to have proper association and they can benefit their lives. So if you see, you know, the roles of parents in fostering future generation and how responsible their lives are, you know, we can see how it is. Okay, so we'll continue with the next verse. Text number 43. Translation or Sanskrit. Tatra tam buddhi samyogam labade paurva dehikam Yatate. On taking such a birth, he revives the divine consciousness of his previous life and he again tries to make further progress in order to achieve complete success, O son of Guru. So on taking such a birth, either of these categories, after taking birth, what happens is, he basically, at a certain point when karma is appropriate, he starts picking up on his previous bhakti he has accumulated and he starts making further progress for complete success. So in this purport, Prabhupada talks about Bharat Maharaj example. So we discussed it in brief, so we will not read the purport. So we will continue to the next verse. Text number 44.
पूर्वाभ्यासेन तेनैव क्रियते हि अवशो अपि सा जिज्ञासुरपि योगस्य शब्दब्रह्माति वर्तते.
By virtue of the divine consciousness of his previous life, he automatically becomes attracted to the yogic principles, even without seeking them. See, this is what happens. See, he just gets attracted because it's around. Everywhere, in every house he goes, there is chanting kirtan. Let's say our devotees' kids, right? They parents go to only devotees' houses. So everywhere there is kirtan going on, the aarti going on, prasadam, everywhere it's... So just the environment is surcharged with devotional service, even without seeking them. So we had to... What is our journey, you know? Like we had to go through so much and finally... We can't even see devotees for so much part of our life and suddenly we met devotees. Such an inquisitive transcendentalist stands always above the ritualistic principles of scriptures. So in the purport, the point, Prabhupada emphasizes about this point of ritualistic principles of scriptures. So you know, scriptures, the karmakanda sections one has to follow, right? So that's what he's saying. Devotees now is transcendentalist, so he's no longer needed to follow this ritualistic points of scriptures. So we'll in the last paragraph, Prabhupada talks about Thakur Haridas, where even though he was from Muslim family, Lord Chaitanya, because of his attachment to the holy names and chanting the holy names, he gave him the position of Namacharya. To say that, you know, the birth and all are not a criteria. The criteria is the devotion. So that's the example Prabhupada talks, and let's read the last three lines. Unless therefore. Mataji, please.
Unless therefore one is purified, one cannot take to the principles of Krishna consciousness or become engaged in the chanting the holy name of the Lord Hare Krishna.
Yeah, so this all these ritualistic principles are there to certain extent to purify us. So Prabhupada is saying unless one is purified, one cannot be taking up the process with determination. That's a verse which we discussed, right? 7.28 verse. And you can write it next to it if you want. 7.28, that's what the verse related to that. Okay, so we'll go to the next verse. Text number 45.
Prayatnayata manastu yogi samshuddha kilpisha aneka janma samsiddha sato yati param gati.
And when the yogi engages himself with sincere endeavor in making further progress, being washed of all contaminations, then ultimately achieving perfection after many many births of practice, he attains the supreme goal. So even now, even though he was born in a transcendentalist family, Krishna is saying actually he may take many many births, but still he is now endeavoring with great determination, no, towards the goal, supreme goal. Yeah. So we'll continue the next verse. The next section, it's okay, right? So we'll continue. Text number 40. So we are now last section, 46 to 47. This whole summary, we can revisit this chart, then it will be clear next time. So 46 to 47, Krishna is talking about the topmost yogi.
Tapasvibhyo adhiko yogi, jnanibhyo abhimato adhika, karmibhyashadhiko yogi, tasmad yogi bhavarjuna.
The yogi, ego yogi is greater than the ascetic, greater than the empiricist and greater than the fruitive worker. Therefore, O Arjuna, in all circumstances, be a yogi. So, you can write down next to ascetic. Ascetic is a person who does austerities for transcendental knowledge. And empiricist is a jnani. Fruitive worker obviously is a karmi or karmakandis. Yeah. So Krishna is telling, you know, don't be jnani, don't be a karmi, don't be a ashtanga yogi, or rather, you know, ascetic, but be a nishkama karma yogi.
What do you say ascetic is?
Ascetic is a person who does austerities for transcendental knowledge. So here, so actually in the purport, Prabhupada clarifies all these different types of yogas are actually different rungs of the ladder, you know, leading up to the bhakti yoga. So bhakti yoga is the topmost one. No, so we'll read last few lines of the purport. Bhakti Yoga or Krishna consciousness is ultimate perfection.
Bhakti Yoga or Krishna consciousness is the ultimate perfection of all yogas, as will be explained in the next verse. The Lord has confirmed herein the superiority of yoga, but he has not mentioned that it is better than Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga is full spiritual knowledge, and therefore nothing can excel it. Asceticism without self-knowledge is imperfect. Empiric knowledge without surrender to the Supreme Lord is also imperfect. And fruitive work without Krishna consciousness is a waste of time. Therefore, the most highly praised form of yoga performance mentioned here is Bhakti Yoga. And this is still more clearly explained in the next verse.
Yeah. So Prabhupada is defining how all of these are incomplete without Bhakti Yoga. And then, which is also emphasized by Krishna in the next verse. Okay, so yoginam api sarvesham matkate nantaratmana shraddhavan bhajate yo mam same yukta tamomatah. And of all yogis, the one with great faith who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself and renders transcendental loving service unto me, he is the most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. That is my opinion. It's very clear. You're getting a calling. Right? So it's very clear that Krishna is saying among all the yogis, person who really thinks of Krishna or bhakti yogi is the topmost. 5 minutes. Okay, let's read the third paragraph. It is by great fortune.
It is by great fortune that one comes to Krishna consciousness on the path of bhakti yoga to become well situated according to the Vedic direction. The ideal yogi concentrates his attention on Krishna, who is first Ramasundar, who is as beautiful as a cloud, whose lotus-like face is as effulgent as the sun, whose dress is brilliant with jewels, and whose body is flower garlanded. Illuminating all sides is his gorgeous luster, which is called the Brahma Yogi. He incarnates in different forms such as Rama, Narsingha, Varaha and Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he descends like a human being as the son of Mother Yashoda, and he is known as Krishna, Govinda, Vasudeva. He is the perfect child, husband, friend, and master, and he is full with all opulences and transcendental qualities. If one remains fully conscious of these features of the Lord, he is called the highest yogi.
Mm. See, first point, right, Papa, it is by great fortune that one comes to Krishna consciousness on the path of Bhakti Yoga to become well situated according to Vedic direction. So it's a great fortune that all of us have come, great fortune and great mercy of Srila Prabhupada, that all of us have come to Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada is saying, all these different yogis, they meditate on so many things like light or air or so many things. But instead of that, he's describing Krishna so nicely and saying, his wonderful form, his different names. And if you just keep meditating on Krishna's flute, his feet and its ankle bells, whole life about his activities, just meditate on Krishna's stealing butter, his stealing clothes. Just keep meditating on that and we become topmost yogi and we can go back to Krishna. It's so easy and sublime process. So thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 6th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of Dhyana Yoga. Hare Bol. Hare Krishna. The marathon ended 3 minutes late.
Fastest class.
Hopefully it has some substance. Hare Krishna. We'll stop here.
Mataji, on the 46th verse, is Krishna Pritya for O Arjuna, in all circumstances be a yogi. So that one translates to Nishkama Karma Yogi.
Yeah.
So that yogi actually meant as a Nishkama Karma Yogi. But in the purport is the Bhakti Yoga. So Bhakti Yoga actually leads to the Nishkama Karma Yogi.
No, it's Nishkama Karma Yogi, but the purport Prabhupada is saying Krishna, that even though Krishna didn't declare Bhakti Yogi to be topmost, he is going to declare in the next verse.
Oh.
So he is just giving among all of this, first be a yogi. And then within the yogis he said be a
Bhakti Yogi.
Okay, we'll stop here. Hare Krishna.